And this hour, of course, we will take your phone calls as we chat with Corey Cooper about the life of Elvis Presley. So jump on board, and we'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Corey Cooper with us. Corey, is there still a demand from media regarding Elvis?
Absolutely. I mean, Elvis is still in the spotlight out there. I mean, it's been 40 years, and as you just saw during the break, they expect the biggest crowd ever at Graceland in Memphis this week for Elvis Week. So definitely that interest is still there. And as the younger generation start finding out about who he is and what he was all about, their interest is going to want to take them to Graceland as well. So I don't see this dwindling anytime soon.
I was going to say, younger people are starting to tune in to who Elvis was, aren't they?
Absolutely. You know, and a lot of, I mean, so many other artists out there now that were influenced by Elvis, too. And a lot of the fans of those people want to know who they were influenced by, and it always seems like a direct link right back to Elvis.
What did he have a pet peeve? Was there anything that really aggravated the guy?
Elvis didn't get into politics, so that wouldn't be one. I just think that not having a sense of loyalty would be a big one for Elvis.
You mean people loyal to him?
Yeah, I mean, and I don't mean that in a bad way, but I just that you know Elvis wanted his friends to be his friends and be loyal, and you know there was a couple times over the years that people that he trusted had really burned him, and he had to get rid of them, and you know find out that they had stole money from him or jewelry, things like that, personal possessions, and that type of stuff really, really would hurt him.
Because I would guess he would have a lot of people over that mansion.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, have you ever been there, George?
No, I've never been to Graceland. I'd like to go see it. Is it a big-looking place or what?
Well, that's what I was going to say if you'd ever been there, because it's very deceiving when you see it in pictures and then when you're there in person, because you expect it to be a lot bigger than it is.
You know, it's like so many things. When you go back and look at your old house that you grew up in as a kid, you thought it was much bigger. And then when you look at it, you go, wow, look how little it is.
Yeah, it is a big, it's a big enough house, but it's just, you know, you would think, it just seemed like it would just be monstrous.
Did he build that house or did he buy it?
No, he bought that in 1957, he bought that for his parents. It had actually been built in 1939 and had been on that property for a long time, but it was actually even used for a church at one point.
How did it get that name, Graceland?
It was named after the doctor that built it. He named it for his daughter.
Ah, okay.
And Elvis liked the name, so he kept it.
So he just kept it. It's cool. And then how often was he in Memphis as opposed to L.A. or Vegas?
Well, there'd be certainly depend on the time frame. Like in the 60s with the filming of the movies, Elvis was in California a lot with that, but Elvis would always go back to Memphis after those were done, or in the tours Elvis would go on, he'd always go back home to Memphis as well. So most of his time at all of his homes was spent in Memphis.
Was Colonel Parker a dear friend of his as well, or just an agent?
Dear friend wouldn't be the wording I would use. I mean, obviously, he was Elvis's advisor and manager, and Elvis would go to him for advice on numerous occasions. But they strictly kept it business. You know, Elvis didn't really hang out with Parker. Parker didn't really hang out with Elvis. As soon as the tour was over, they kind of go their separate ways. You know, but they still would keep in contact. But they didn't really socialize all that much together. It was pretty much just a business deal between them.
Corey, how come we don't hear much about Elvis's father?
Well, sadly, Elvis's dad passed away about 2 years after Elvis did. And so, you know, he wasn't around all that much longer to be interviewed or to be on shows. Or
Was he married to Elvis's mother for a long time?
Well, Gladys, Elvis's mom, passed away in August of 1958.
Oh, that's pretty early, then.
Yeah, yeah, and then Vernon, Elvis's father, remarried in 1960. Elvis and his stepmom didn't have the greatest of relationships, so that didn't really go all well.
Did Elvis have any brothers or sisters?
He had a twin brother, Jesse Garon, that was stillborn.
Ah, okay.
which kind of led to the closeness and the relationship that Elvis had with his mother, Gladys, because he was now an only child.
He was it. That was it. Was he good in school?
He was okay in school. You know, he wasn't a terrible student, but he wasn't necessarily an honor roll student either.
Did he play sports?
He tried to play football for a little while, but the coach wanted him to cut his hair and look like the other kids, and Elvis didn't necessarily want to do that.
Where did he get that little slogan, thank you very much?
You know, I think it was just something he liked to say to the audience, and it just stood out there, and it's one of those pop culture iconic references that we hear all the time.
It really is. It's like Johnny Cash's I'm Johnny Cash. That kind of thing.
Yeah, and you know, and then of course, you know, Elvis didn't say this, but what else do we always hear all the time too is that Elvis has left the building.
Exactly. Exactly. How did that happen?
Al DeVorin, who was one of the people that worked on Elvis's tours, said it one night to try to alleviate mass hysteria with the crowds and people trying to get to Elvis, and basically said, you know, Elvis has left the building in attempt to let people know, hey, he's not here anymore, so don't freak out trying to find him. And then it just became a staple after every show.
I love it. We're going to take calls now, and if anybody ever met Elvis, try to check in with us. I'd love to know how that went. Philip is driving in Nevada. Welcome to the show. Hi, Philip.
Hi, guys. Hey, there's two things that you might find interesting, and the third I'll tell you about that I think proves he could still be alive.
All right, okay? Go ahead.
The first one is that Elvis actually was born a twin, and his twin brother died in childbirth.
Yep.
And what's fascinating about that is apparently there is some speculation that throughout the course of his life, he was trying to make up for that and actually maybe attempting to channel that the counterpart's experience. And that's kind of an interesting thing as it relates to him. Also, too, in his early childhood, there was a comic book character, and I forget what it is, who this person was, but maybe you can Google this. But anyway, this comic book character looked exactly like the later Elvis in adulthood. And it's fascinating. He had a cape and everything. And Elvis was known to read that with regularly and, you know, try to take on aspects of the character that was in that comic book. So if you can find that, I don't remember what it is, but it's kind of fascinating. And then the third thing is, if you guys, George, if you Google the Home Alone movie, the first one, where the housewife is standing at the airport in line just before she meets John Candy.
Okay.
Ride home. Look off to her left or our right as a viewer, and you will see Elvis Presley standing there. I'm not kidding you. This is all over the internet. If you get a chance.
And what year was that first movie made?
Oh, boy. I'm thinking 1990, maybe.
All right. So well after he died, apparently.
But a friend of mine just put this on to me maybe 2 or 3 months ago, and I looked at that, and I, holy mackerel. And, there's no claim in the film whatsoever who this person is. It's just a person that's standing in line, kind of to her left from her perspective, but our right as a viewer. Look that up.
Does it look like it's a movie extra, or they were just randomly taking film shots of people?
Yeah, I don't know, and nobody knows, and there's a big mystery surrounding it, but look at that guy and show it to your guests. I think he'll get a major kick out of that.
All right, very good. Have you seen that, Corey, at all?
Yeah, what do you speak of? It's an extra in that movie. And when they stop the camera and then have a still of it in certain angles, it sort of kind of does resemble Elvis. But I've actually seen an interview with that extra, and the man looks nothing like Elvis. It's just a weird camera.
It's kind of weird,
I mean, again, Elvis passed away in 1977, so he's absolutely not standing with a beard in disguise in the Home Alone movie.
Was the funeral open casket?
Yes.
It was.
And, you know, and good point made, too, there, George, is that, you know, 20,000 people, you know, walked by the casket to see Elvis in it as well. So,
yeah. I mean, what a sad story, though. My gosh, Corey. 42 years old. When he died, where was he peak-wise in his career?
Well, he was still obviously very popular. He was about to embark on a sold-out concert tour.
Was he going up, going down, flat? Where was he?
I mean, he definitely wasn't at the pinnacle of what his career had been, but he was, you know, slowed down recording. But he just had an album came out, Moody Blue, that was doing quite well in sales, and the tours were still selling out. So, you know, I wouldn't want to say that he was fading, but, you know, he definitely wasn't in the pinnacle of his career anymore, but he was still in a pretty steady career.
Let's go west. Roger's in Payson, Arizona now. Hey, Raj, go ahead.
Hi, thank you.
Sure.
I was always wondering, and there have been a lot of queries regarding the misspelling of Elvis Presley's middle name on his tombstone.
Well, how that happened is as simple as that, a simple misspelling. In some places you'll see the spelling as one A, A-R-O-N. Others you'll see it with a double A. What had happened is that Elvis always wanted the biblical spelling of Aaron, which would be with the two A's. When Elvis went to actually get that changed through Shelby County, he found out that it actually had been spelled that way on the record. So in some papers, depending on what era it is of Elvis's life, you'll see that he used to spell his name with a 1A, and sometimes it's with a 2A. But for all historic purposes, the estate uses the double A spelling, and that's why it's on his gravestone.
I think a lot of people, too, think Elvis faked his death or something like that because of the mystery around Paul McCartney and that whole Beatles conspiracy. Remember that one?
Yeah, absolutely. As in, when you have our Gary Patterson on as well, he when he goes deep into that story, it's very interesting. But you know, and Gary's great how he leaves it up to the listener or the reader of the book to make their own determination.
But Gary was. Did you know he just passed away?
Oh my gosh, I did not know.
Yes, he just died.
Oh my gosh, I am so sorry.
As a matter of fact, I was just talking to Tom about that, saying we are lacking an expert in the music field, and he said, "Well, you know, Corey may be the one." Yeah, it's sad story. He was just with us at a live stage show event, and then he passed on. I didn't even know he was sick.
Oh, I'm so sorry to hear that. You know, Gary was a very, very neat man and very knowledgeable, and boy, was an absolutely fantastic guest every time you had him on.
Oh, my God, yeah, we miss him a lot. Let's go next to Rick in Phoenix, Arizona. Go ahead, Rick, you're on with us.
Thanks, George and Corey. Maybe you can help me understand what it is about these stars, this charismatic quality that they seem to have from something in their upbringing, like being a twin and an only child or insecure. And sometimes these stars look almost effeminate. The men have a sort of effeminate quality. What's some of the qualities that make them have this effect on women and just be so exceptional?
Well, I think with Elvis was the complete uniqueness. I mean, nobody looked like him in the style that he wore, you know, and the smile and just that aura that he had.
And he was a good-looking guy.
He was a good-looking guy. He, you know, emanated sexuality. You know, he had a great voice. He just had that charm with the women. And, boy, you know, and it just worked.
And he had money.
That doesn't hurt either.
He did well for himself, didn't he?
Well, Elvis wasn't as wealthy as you think he might have been, considering that it was Elvis. I mean, Elvis did like to spend money as fast as he made it, and Elvis also didn't really get advised all that well in investing his money. So when Elvis passed away, he only had a little over $1 million in a checking account and didn't really have any investments other than a little bit in a couple of publishing companies for music.
Tony's with us, Corona, California. Hey, Tone, go ahead.
Hey, George, good to talk to you again.
You too, Tony.
I had the opportunity to sing at Elvis Presley's house in Chino Canyon, and I met Mayborn Axon. That's the lady who wrote Heartbreak Hotel with Elvis on the
Cool.
Music. And I sat and talked to her, and she told me the history behind Heartbreak Hotel. It's about a gentleman who committed suicide because of a bad relationship with a lady.
Wow.
And, I really had a good time at Elvis's house over there in Chino Canyon, and he had another house in Palm Springs.
Now, was he there?
No, he wasn't. This was when they had the meeting greets that they had in the 90s.
Okay. He was already gone then.
Yeah. The state still owned the house at that time, and they sold it. And,
what did it feel like being in one of his houses?
It felt like strange, but I went out to my van, I brought my guitar, and I sang a song from G.I. Blues.
What's your favorite Elvis song, Tony?
Probably If I Can Dream, but I also like Can't Help Falling in Love.
Yeah, that's a classic. Tony, thanks for that. I love that story. Joe in Long Island, New York. Hey, Joseph, go ahead.
Hey, Corey, I would ask you about his relationship with Anne Margaret, who was supposed to be the female Elvis and, you know, has still had a still going career. And then with Frank Sinatra, he seemed to have much more of a movie career where he was, it seems like he was a megastar in the movies at the time. But I don't think either one of them got invited to Woodstock, Elvis or Frank Sinatra. I don't think they fit in with that crowd.
No.
Yeah.
Not at all. And what would Elvis say about the music today, Corey?
Well, he would like some more than others, that's for sure. But like we've spoke about, you know, he knew there was room for everybody. So he'd be pretty liberal and generous when his thinking when it comes to other artists, for sure.
We've got Rick in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Hi, Rick. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, George, how you doing?
Good.
Good. Yeah, I just want to share with you and Mr. Cooper, I did get a chance to see Elvis live at the Comeback Tour in 1968 at the old Olympia Theater in Detroit.
Oh, I remember that. I remember that well.
I don't know if a lot of people, Mr. Cooper probably knows about it, but the movie King Creole was, of course, a Harold Robbins book, Stone for Danny Fisher. And when it was first being considered for a screenplay, when it was first came out, I think James Dean was considered for the role, but he, of course, died in 56.
That's correct.
And also Elvis and Bobby Darin also competed for the role of Tony for the 1960 movie West Side Story.
Who won that, Bobby Darin?
No. Richard Boehmer did. Richard Boehmer got it. Darin and they felt, I think the writers and the producers felt that Darin and definitely Elvis would take away too much from the movie.
Huh.
And you might enjoy this. You might enjoy this as well. Can you imagine Elvis as Dirty Harry? Because Elvis was one of the people that was in the running for that role. Can you imagine that?
The one that Clint Eastwood got.
Absolutely.
Jeez.
That would have changed things.
That would have been something. Yeah, I think back now of the movies Elvis was in. He did a pretty good job acting.
Well, you could definitely see it, you know, in King Creole, which was Elvis's favorite movie. You could see his acting chops. You know, you could see it in there. Just, you know, after that, though, they did so many of them, and, you know, and they always wanted Elvis to sing, and that's, you know, Elvis was trying to get away from that, and he never really did. I mean, he did Charo, which was a Western towards the end of his film career, and, you know, didn't sing in that, but, you know, they always made those movie contracts, and he always had to sing five or six songs.
Stay with us. We're going to come back in just a moment and wrap things up with final phone calls. Corey Cooper, our special guest, as we talk about the 40th anniversary of the death of Elvis Presley. Don't forget to like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, email me at george@coasttocoastam.com. Welcome back to our final segment. George Norrie with you along with Corey Cooper as we talk about the anniversary of the death of Elvis Presley 40 years ago today, August 16th, 1977. My gosh, where does the time go, Corey?
Yeah, it's just amazing thinking back in that four decades. And, gosh, four decades. And how much more music that Elvis had in him that we would have been listening to. So sad.
You know what? That is true. Was he coming up with any new songs toward the end of his life?
They were, but it wasn't certainly the catalog to pick from. It was a lot less. He wasn't recording as much. He kind of stopped going to RCA in Nashville to record, and they'd actually just bring the equipment to him and set up in the den, which is the jungle room, and he would record there. It was just kind of a different way how they did the songs. There's a lot of songs that Elvis wanted to do from other people he wouldn't be able to get those songs because of the deals that Parker would make with him when it came to giving up certain percentages of the rights to the song. So Elvis missed out on a lot of music that way.
That's where the Beatles were very smart.
So yeah, it's too bad Elvis didn't take a lesson from them with this, but with
exactly.
Parker handling everything, it just wasn't going to be.
Back to the phones. Chris is with us, Columbus, Ohio. Hi, Chris. Welcome to the program.
Hi, George. I told you a story years ago, and it's good to get in Elvis's anniversary here. I met Elvis in 1972. What it was, I was in Job Corps. We had our military uniforms on with a Job Corps patch on it. Car pulled up at the gate. We'd come down and visit on a 72-hour pass.
And where were you?
There in Graceland.
Okay.
In Memphis, you know. And we had our uniforms on, and a car pulled up. A window went down in the back and went down and actually saw him. Oh, wow, you know, that was cool. And, well, anyway, what we were doing, we were practicing for a parade. We were doing a march like Stripes in Job Corps because we was going to do a festival.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're waiting to get a look around the place, and pretty soon the guard comes up and says, "My boss wants to talk to you." What did we do wrong, you know? You know, and we didn't expect, we went up to the kitchen there, had sandwiches with Elvis, and told him about Job Corps, and we'd heard years later that he'd started something else, a training program for children, for other young people. And he asked us what you know, all the guys knew this about me. He said, "Well, what do you like about, you all like my music, you know? What do you think of it, you know?" I said, "We all like it, except for him. He don't like your damn Kentucky Rain song." I said, "Oh, geez." I shrunk down. He said, "Okay." He says, "What? I got to know." He says, "What's wrong with my damn Kentucky Rain song?" And I told him. I said, "Well, said that song come on the radio. I'm walking in Kentucky in the rain. I open up a letter from home, and it's my girl. And it's Dear John letter. She'd found somebody else."
Oh, jeez.
And he knows how the song goes, and he got a kick out of it. He just started laughing. He said, "That's all right, son." He said, "It happens to all of us, you know." And it was just a wonderful meet. We never thought we was going to meet the guy. But years later after that, I got to meet the son of his pilot and another gentleman who his uncle lived in back of Elvis, and he said there was this guy with a motorcycle helmet coming back behind the place there. And he stopped and said, "Hey, what are you doing there?" And it was Elvis. He said, "Well, I got the helmet on, so people won't recognize me." So he actually got out of the house.
That was something.
And drove in that motorcycle and enjoyed life.
I love it. That's a great story.
I mentioned Ricky Nelson because those two were pretty good together. Okay, I'll let you go, George.
Thanks, Chris. Great story. I love these stories, Corey.
Oh, it's great. It is great to like that. I mean, you got to hang out with Elvis and have a sandwich and talk with him. How fantastic.
Well, and it echoes exactly what you were saying about how friendly Elvis was to people. He'd just bring them in.
Yeah, that's, you know, I think that's part of his charm. That's what endeared him. Even though he was the most famous superstar in the world, he was still this normal, down-to-earth guy that was accessible.
Did he have a maid and somebody like that at the place?
Oh, yes. He had different maids over the years, but he always had somebody there. I believe a couple of them. Pauline was one, and Nancy Rooks. They've written some cookbooks over the years, some of Elvis's favorite stuff that he liked to do. And I've met them, and they're really fun. It's really neat to talk to them.
Let's go to JP in St. Louis, Missouri. Hey, JP, go ahead.
Good morning, George. I love the show.
Thank you.
I love the subject you're talking about. I'd like your guest to comment on three quick points.
Sure.
One is that my understanding is after the colonel died, it was found out he had come into the country at some kind of semi-illegal status, and that is why Elvis had, there was demands, and they begged him to come to Japan, Australia, and around the world, and except for Hawaii and his tour in Germany, he never went out of the country, and the colonel didn't want to, he was afraid there'd be some immigration problem for him, so he made impossible demands, and so therefore, Elvis never got a tour around the world.
Huh.
And the second point is about when the Beatles came to California and jammed with him a little bit. And the third point is, I think the voice he admired the most was, I think, another Southern boy that probably, recorded for Sun was Roy Orbison.
Roy was. That's right.
Yeah, absolutely. Elvis was a big Roy Orbison fan. And you're right about Colonel Parker. He was an illegal Dutch immigrant and didn't have the paperwork. His real name was Andreas van Kuik, and he got the title of a colonel from a friend of his that was a governor in Louisiana, and the Tom Parker part, I guess, was some friend of his that was in the military. So, yeah, he was a true carny, Colonel Tom Parker.
That's amazing stories. That truly is. Let's go to John in Ontario, Canada, on the international line. John, go ahead.
Hello, George. How are you?
Good, John. Thank you. Go ahead.
I got rid of that echo. Yes, good evening to your guests. I've spent probably about $15,000 on Elvis.
In what, music and stuff?
Yep.
$15,000, and you still have the collection?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's probably worth something now.
I've got some things. I asked your Gary Patterson one night. I have some Elvis 45s from Sun Records.
You do?
Yes.
What do you think that's worth, Corey?
Well, if he's got some original pressings from the Sundays, you got some cool collectible items there for sure. You know, those prices differ from time to time. But, you know, if you want to let me know what you have, you can give me an email. I'm elvisexpert@AOL.com, and I can try to lead you in the right direction and get some
great
pricing on that if you'd like.
Good luck, John. Indeed. With collectibles, I guess there are companies that would spin that stuff off for you if you wanted to sell it, right?
There is. And a lot of the stuff with the collectibles now is that anything that's aftermarket when it comes to Elvis has been so mass-produced and so much of it, there's really none of that type stuff that's really worth all that much. But if a lot of people, though, if they have original items from the summer and winter sessions that Elvis did in Vegas or Lake Tahoe, such as like pennants, you know, the hats, pens, the menus, you know, can you imagine this, George? You go to the dinner show at the Hilton in Vegas, and you get a free menu, and just because it has Elvis's picture on it and the dates he was there, you know, it could be worth $1,200, and those are things that you could have just picked up stacks of.
Oh, my God.
Free.
Yeah, absolutely. Who would know, right?
Absolutely crazy.
Tim is in Orange County, California. Go ahead, Tim. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, George.
Hi there.
I really appreciate your show.
Thank you.
Hey, the reason I called was because my sister-in-law happens to be Dave Hebler's niece, and I guess he guarded Elvis for a couple years. And with the West Brothers, he ended up writing a book, Elvis What Happened, which I believe is out of print. They tried to help Elvis get off drugs, but to no avail. And my other tenuous connection is, in the 70s, my martial arts instructor had been in that first class with Dave that was hand-taught by Ed Parker, and he got a chance to go up to the house in Tahoe, and, of course, everybody in the martial arts class asked him, well, how was Elvis? And he said basically that Elvis came out and kind of jumped out and said, who wants to spar? And kind of broke the tension. And then he said for the rest of the weekend, he was just a very humble, quiet type of guy. So every indication I've ever gotten from anybody that's ever met him was the guy really had a great heart, and he was a really nice guy.
You know, and he must have been a tiger on the stage and so docile behind the scenes, Corey.
Yeah, that's a perfect way to put it. In fact, that was his martial arts symbol was the tiger.
Tim is in Ohio now. Welcome to the program, Tim. Go ahead.
Hi, George. I would like an answer to the conspiracy theory of the wax dummy at Elvis's funeral, why he looked so young and he did look so young, and the conspiracy that it had an air conditioning unit in the bottom of the casket, and that's why it weighed so much. I'll take my answer off here. Thank you.
All right. Corey, can you address that?
Sure. That's been one of the long-standing theories in the conspiracy theory, is that that it was a wax dummy, and that Elvis didn't look like everybody thought that he should have looked like. They'll try to say that he had a his nose looked different or something in the casket, and then, you know, I mean, and not to, to get in a macabre about things, but, you know, after somebody passes away, and you know, you're going to look a little different. And of course, they were doing their best to try to make Elvis look as good as he could look. And, you know, and then, but there's, again, no basis in fact with that. And you know, air conditioning unit in the casket. And look, if they were going to fake Elvis's death, the monumental amount of people it would have taken to pull something off like that, and here 40 years later that nobody would have came forward, out of all the people it would have taken to do something like that, it's just, this goes beyond human nature. And why, and if you were going to do that, why would you have an open casket and let 20,000 people shuffle by?
And you know what? And I'm sure he had an ego. He loved the roar of the crowd. Once it gets in your system, you can't just give it up like that. And so I don't think he would have.
Well, and another thing, too, there was, like we were talking earlier, there's no reason for that. Elvis didn't work for the CIA. You know, he wasn't going to testify in court against mobsters. You know, that's, you know, I've seen what's in the FBI files. You know, there's nothing like that in there. And so, you know, it's just tabloid fodder. And it's just, you know, but it keeps Elvis's name out there and people are still interested in it.
First time caller is Tom in Fort Worth, Texas. Go ahead, Tom.
Yes. Hi, George. And
hi there.
Corey. Hi. Well, my story is this one. I remember it was about like late June of 1977, and I picked up a copy of Rolling Stone magazine at a newsstand, and there was a section in there they used to call Random Notes. And there was just a small item in there that was talking about a concert Elvis was in, and in the middle of the concert, he suddenly became sick, and they had to take him backstage and revive him or resuscitate him, and then so after delay, and the audience just waited outside, out in the theater, wherever he was at, and then he finally came back out and resumed his performance and finished the concert, and wish I'd saved the issue, but I didn't, and I remember thinking at the time, you know, gee, I wonder what's the matter with him, and then I just kind of pretty much dismissed it until like about a month and a half later, you know, when I heard the news of what happened to him.
Did you ever hear that one, Corey?
There was times, you know, sometimes he might need some oxygen on the side of the stage or things like that, and other times, you know, he was just exhausted. I mean, I heard stories, you know, a little bit here and there about that. I don't know about that one specifically that he mentions. But, you know, there was definitely some issues going on the last few months of his life, sadly.
Willie Nelson was 84 years old, just had an episode in Salt Lake City where he says the atmosphere, levels got to him. He couldn't breathe.
Gosh, yeah, and you got to think, you know, you know, all that tour, you know, you're just not on a normal schedule. And somebody up in an age like that, too, boy, it's really got to be rough.
William is with us in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Hey, William, go ahead.
Hey, how you doing, George? Love
great.
The program.
Thank you.
Just wanted to mention that my aunt Mary Marguerite Calius, went to high school with Elvis, and she was in charge of talent in high school, and they discussed him, you know, performing in the talent show and whatnot, and he did, obviously, and, you know, became a great person, you know, a great performer. But as well, we used to have a yearbook, my aunt's yearbook. She's passed now, and it was signed by Elvis, the Humes High yearbook, and it said, "To a cutie, Elvis Presley."
Oh, that's got to be worth emotional stuff, at least. Huh?
Yeah. Yeah, he used to ride her home from high school to the house on his little Cushman scooter. So, but you know, back then it was no big deal because he hadn't, you know, hasn't risen to fame and all that. You know, and
he was just Elvis.
Right, just Elvis, exactly. So, anyway, I just wanted to throw that in.
Cool story. I love it.
Great, George. All these stories. Everybody has these warm remembrances of Elvis, and that's what just endeared him to the fans. You know, you just hear these good things about Elvis, and it's sad he only lived to be 42. But boy, look at what he left us to entertain us with in those 42 years.
Well, and what's so amazing, Corey, is the CDs and the records—they all live forever, don't they?
They definitely do. And the movies, you know, we can put on Elvis Elmer, put in an Elvis movie and smile and enjoy what he gave us. And that's what it's all about, and that's why everybody gathers every year in Graceland to commemorate that life.
Corey, keep in touch with us, okay?
Absolutely. And if anybody needs to get a hold of me, ElvisExpert@AOL.com. Thank you, George, so much.
Thank you, Corey. The 40th anniversary of the death of Elvis Presley, who died on August 16th, 1977. It just seems like it was yesterday. 40 years have blown by already. And I'm talking about how fast this year goes. Wow. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Laudasaur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Boros, and George Knapp, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.